Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2015, Episode 7. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. We start this week talking about a Nebraska loss, a tough one to open up the season at home against BYU, losing 33-28 on what was one of the most popular college football plays of the weekend. That was the Hail Mary pass in which BYU, with no time left on the clock, caught a ball in the end zone to everybody's disbelief in Memorial Stadium, including that of my co-host. You know him better as the doctor, former Husker All-American Dr. Rob Zadiska. Doc, I got to ask, did you stay in the stadium for the entire game?
I was there to the bitter end. I did not leave my seats. Our seats. I went with our oldest daughter. We had a great time. We were in our seats until the very end.
Did you contemplate it? Because I'm sure there's some people that that filtered out thinking, okay, I'm going to beat the rush. Nebraska's winning here.
There were people, because when you got about mid-fourth quarter, Nebraska, honest to God, was in utter control of the game for the better part of the second half. And there were people, you're thinking mid-fourth quarter, we've come down from, a 24-14 hole to came storming back to take a 28-24 lead. I mean, Nebraska has thoroughly outplayed BYU, in my opinion, other than maybe four plays, the better part of that second half.
Now, that game has been dissected many times, many different ways, by a lot of different publications, pundits, radio shows, TV shows. And I don't know necessarily if we're going to focus on the game itself, but let's talk about what you saw in the game. Because at the end of the Bill Callahan era, I know I had to say his name. I apologize for that. People were getting frustrated.
He's a great O-line coach in the NFL.
By the losses. At the end of the Bo Pelini era, people were getting frustrated by the losses. Even though he won, it was the losses that was frustrating.
People with Pelini were frustrated with how they lost.
And so now you have a new coach who has a lot more rope to work with. And things are going to be different for a little bit. But let's talk about what you saw and what you liked, what you didn't like, what you think may be some concerns as the season goes along. But before we get to that, don't forget about the Remington Trophy presentation. It's coming up January 16th, 2016 at the Rococo Theater. Of course, the Remington Trophy goes to the best center in college football, and it's named after former Husker great Mr. Dave Remington. Again, the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Get your tickets now by going to remingtontrophy.com. So let's start with what you did like from Nebraska.
Yeah, I like the consistency on the offensive line, not in how they played necessarily, but in the fact that they went with five starters. And they're already saying they're going to go with the same five guys this week as well, too. They haven't seen anything that's made them change their mind in terms of who's going out there. And I think you got to have that if you want that consistency of play. Pick five guys. Go with those five guys. You have a solid set of backups. Make sure those guys are getting reps in practice. If it's a blowout game, you put those backups in. You've got your rotational guys. But outside of that, you don't do this constant switch up of moving guys from tackle to guard to center to defensive tackle and then back to guard again, all in the course of a single season. I think that just completely screws with the continuity, and I think you're asking for trouble when you do that, when you're looking for that consistency of play. Offensive line is a position where you got to have guys that have, you rely on each other. You've got to know what each other's thinking, and you've got to be able to have a feel for what the guy next is going to do. And if you're not playing together consistently, play in, play out, game in, game out, you're not going to have that. So I like the fact that that's kind of come out of this game. I like the fact that they made adjustments. Now, Nebraska's offense played quite well in the first quarter. It was pretty vanilla, and I think BYU was kind of feeling them out a little bit. Second quarter rolled around. BYU started blitzing. They brought up safeties. They blitzed linebackers. They blitzed the safeties. They blitzed linebackers and safeties. It completely screwed up Nebraska. Nebraska's offense was just looked dumbfounded. Nebraska's offense in the second quarter of that BYU game, they looked like a Bo Pelini defense against Wisconsin. Guys standing around, looking at each other, hands out to the sides, not knowing exactly who should be picking up who. They went in at halftime halftime, early third quarter, they made adjustments. It's the first time that I've seen that happen, where you've seen things going bad in the second quarter and you saw guys come out and they did things differently in the third quarter.
I mean, really, when is the last time you and I sat here and talked about this team responded and made adjustments in the second half to what was going wrong?
I've seen teams respond, but it always wasn't in the sense of, hey, we're going to go do something different than what we did in the first half because that wasn't working. And I've seen teams respond. I've seen Pelini teams look bad in the first half, and I've seen them emotionally, mentally, physically respond in the second, but you didn't see those adjustments. You didn't see them come out doing different things. And I saw Nebraska on offense and defense doing different things. They started throwing a few different blitz packages in. They started blitzing more in the second half. Nebraska's defense beat up BYU's offense in the second half of that game. I don't blame... You know, I'm upset about these two third and shorts in the fourth quarter. I don't necessarily blame Riley and Banker for punting the ball and not going for it on fourth down. You're backed up in your own territory, not badly, but you haven't crossed the 50-yard line yet. It's late in the game. You don't want to give the opponent good field position. And you know what? Their defense was playing lights out second half because of these adjustments they made. Having Taysom Hill get hurt definitely helped. The kid can run the ball like nobody's business. I feel my heart breaks for the kid because I think he's a special talent. But Nebraska's defense was playing a hell of a lot better in that second half than they did late first quarter and all of the second. So those adjustments were another thing that it was nice to see that. Here's the other thing I liked. You had a third and one, actually a little less than one on that first third and one in the fourth quarter. I'm sitting there and I'm listening to people around me in the stands talking about, should we do an option? I mean, you pass here. I mean, I think we surprised me. Go for a pass on this play. And I'm sitting there going, no, you run a quarterback sneak and get the first down. And then when you got your first and 10, then you decide what you want to do to throw them off balance. Get the first down first. They lined up. They ran a quarterback sneak. It was a horribly executed one, but I loved the call. It showed a coach, I'm not going to do something cute and stupid. I'm going to do what should work and what should get us the first down in a perfect, not even a perfect world, but in a proper football world, that's what's going to get you the first down 9 times out of 10, and I put the blame on the offensive line for that. They should have gone out and gotten the first down. There's sometimes you just go get it, and they didn't do that. About the only other thing I might add is would have been nice to have a fullback in on that play, and they didn't. A la Reggie Bush pushing from behind. That doesn't hurt anything.
Of course, if you're listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, more than likely you found it at HuskerMax.com. HuskerMax.com, your complete source for great Husker news, content, and so much more. And, of course, a proud distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So when you need Husker news, go to HuskerMax.com. And you're ready for a great meal and a great beer. There's two great combinations at the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson, where they make their own craft beer, and it's absolutely delicious. And don't forget, they got a full menu as well, like the smoked pulled pork. It's a molasses barbecue pork with mustard slaw, jalapeno, and a Kaiser roll. Just a wonderful, wonderful dish. You and I have eaten at the Benson Brewery several times, and we never get sick of it, do we?
No, you got to try the Maple Street Melt as well.
Yeah, it's really good. So if you want to go enjoy a good beer and good food, go to the Benson Brewery, a proud supporter of the Husker Doc Talk podcast at 6059 Maple in Omaha. You can go to BensonBrewery.com. You know, being an offensive lineman, you talked about the offensive line. Were you disappointed in the all-around effort of the guys up front?
All around, no, not at all. Actually, I thought they did a lot of things very, very well. I think you saw better overall technique. There's this just absolutely frustrating, puzzling inability on third and one to go out and just will your way to a first down. And that's something you've got to be able to have. Now, I don't necessarily know if it's coaching, if it's play calling, if it's the schematic side of things. My gut instinct is that that's a situation where it's purely a, you know, Milt Teniper would always say, get your nose in the dirt and root like a pig. And, you know, A couple people on Twitter made the comment to me that, you know, at the end of the play, they saw three out of the five offensive linemen actually standing up, which is, I mean, that's like a capital crime on a quarterback sneak for an offensive lineman. I mean, even if you're a blocking tight end on a quarterback sneak, you're still thinking, I'm pinching in and I'm going to try and pinch all the way down and pick off one of these linebackers from the side just so the pile can keep moving forward. And that's like I said, it's absolutely puzzling to me that they haven't gotten this down yet. And that's something, when you look at who Nebraska has in there, when you look at a guy like Condola, you look at a guy like Ryan Reeves, these are not small, weak people. These are good athletes.
Does this go back to the podcast we had a couple of weeks ago when it comes to maybe two-a-day practices and contact? And I mean, you had a tweet, and by the way, you can follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, at DocTalkSports. You tweeted something out about that earlier in the week.
Basically, I said, you know, the tweet that I put out there was essentially, you know, is this an argument that you still got to have a degree of contact? At some point during practice, we did a once a week. I mean, it was a quick once a week, and it was something that guys looked forward to all week long because it was a pride thing. During the season, you put the first team offense out there, the first team defense, you put your nose down, and you got after it. And I think Osborne would put the ball on the 3-yard line, 5-yard line, whatever, and 20 years ago now, but basically he put the ball on the 3-yard line, and it was called the goal line drill, and the offense had one set of downs to make it into the end zone, and if they didn't make it, the drill was over. If we made it, the drill was over. That was it. I mean, unless you scored on the first play. If you scored on the first play, you lined up again and defense got a second chance.
But that a drill you guys look forward to?
Yeah.
Because you wanted to score.
It was a pride thing. I mean, that was bragging rights for a week against a very good defense. I mean, I always kind of like to look at the black shirts at that. They were kind of our punching dummies during practice. So, but it was a pride thing that I think we got better because of that drill. Now, I'm not looking for a situation to see guys get hurt, legs get twisted. You could make the tackle. You couldn't hit anybody low. I mean, that was one of the rules, though, with it, is you couldn't go low on somebody. You couldn't cut block. But it was essentially, it was a full speed, full contact goal line practice, and it helped. It made the defense better. It made our offense better.
You know, I'm one of these guys who maybe in the past would have harped on a loss a lot longer, but I know I've been through too many coaching changes in Nebraska now, and that's weird to say that I've been through too many coaching changes in Nebraska, and so have you, to witness. So I don't think you harp on one loss. Listen, that opening game win streak was going to come to an end eventually.
Well, and the last guy who lost an opening game in Nebraska was Osborne.
Yes, I mean, it happens. This was a quality opponent, probably one of the better quality opponents we've seen in a long time. But so let's not harp on the loss. Let's look at what you saw from the coaching staff. Did you like what you saw as far as coaching?
Second quarter, I was about ready. I wanted them all fired. Nebraska in that second quarter looked a little bit lost, and I think that was a product of having a new system. And when you've got a new system and an opponent comes in and starts throwing you some looks that you haven't seen before on film, you're going to get confused. And that happened. That coaching staff made adjustments. Again, I can't emphasize this enough. It's been a while since you walked out of a game going, God, it sucks we lost, but holy cow, we saw adjustments. We saw coaches coaching. We saw guys making calculated decisions based upon the situation that they were in, and they were sound decisions from a football standpoint. Now, there's a lot of things I could pick apart. Don't run a jet sweep on a third and one. Run an option play. Then you've got options on an option play. Jet sweep, they bottle it up, you're dead in the water. But they were making decisions based upon the situation. They were making decisions based upon how the defense was playing. They were making decisions based upon what the opponent was doing, and they were adjusting to that. And that when things didn't work in the first half, instead of hearing a press conference after the game talking about, well, hey, that was on me, we didn't have the guys prepared, or a situation of, hey, guys weren't executing the system. And that was something we heard a lot was, you know, the system works, they just didn't execute. Well, guess what? The system maybe wasn't working in the second quarter on Saturday, and guys weren't executing, and so they changed it. They changed the system. They changed the execution, and guys made plays, and it worked. Nebraska played a great second half. I mean, in my opinion, Nebraska played a great first quarter, a great third and fourth quarter, save for four plays. And two of those four plays, and I'm talking about the long lob pass that they got a first down on earlier in the fourth quarter that led to that last field goal that BYU got, and then the final play, there's a fair amount of luck in both of those. BYU, that was a combination of skill. It was a combination of luck on both of those plays. And then there was the two third and shorts. And both of those are the four plays that if you take away those four plays, honestly, you take away any one of those four plays, Nebraska probably wins that football game.
Hey, folks, did you know cystic fibrosis is not curable, but you can still help? And as people are living longer and longer, and Doc, you see this with cystic fibrosis, the life expectancy keeps growing, and that's where the Boomer Esiason Foundation really plays a huge part. And you can support this Boomer Esiason Foundation and help in the fight against CF by attending the Remington Trophy presentation at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln, January 16th, 2016. For tickets, just go to remingtontrophy.com. Of course, the trophy named after our friend, he's your friend, former Husker great Dave Remington, who is also the president of the Boomer Esiason Foundation.
Who, by the way, just posted a whole slew of photos.
From
Burning Man on his Instagram account. So if you want to see...
What was your favorite? The temple was my favorite. The underneath of the temple?
I like the temple. The one with the string of red balloons.
If you're not a friend with Dave on Facebook, I think he's kind of maxed out at that 5,000. Dave, you need to follow Dave on Instagram, or Dave, you should just start like a photo blog so everybody can see your photos. Because
it's amazing work.
And Burning Man is by far the best event. It's a freak show. It is an absolute freak show.
Yeah, but he kind of keeps it clean with his photos. It's family-friendly stuff. There's nothing bad.
Yeah, but
go to Instagram, go to Facebook, check out his photos. If you love New York City, by the way, he's got some awesome photos. Central Park, the architecture, New York City. It's great.
I always wonder if Dave's got a little freak on him because he goes to Burning Man every year. Either that or he just likes to watch.
I got to be honest with you. He is he's not your typical ex-jock.
He's not.
I mean, the guy was a two-time academic All-American, and the guy is an absolute intellectual. You got to go check out his work. It's incredible photography.
So we've talked about the coaching. Let's talk about the individual performance. Anybody stand out individually that you thought, okay, this guy is going to be, he's good, but how about anybody that was, okay, this guy's a difference maker?
And Tommy Armstrong threw the ball a hell of a lot better than I thought we'd see him throw. I always knew he had arm strength. You look at like the long bomb for the touchdown against Georgia in that bowl game a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. He's able to throw the ball. It's not like he's got a weak arm. His touch was way better. Second, you know, when he had those blitzes hitting him second quarter, early third, I thought he was trying to throw the ball with a little too much oomph on it, zip it in there. His touch is good enough. He doesn't have to do it. Now, the other thing is that I really liked, and this isn't one guy. When was the last game where you saw wide receivers catching most of what was thrown at them? I mean, it's been a while. And it was every wide receiver. You got the ball in a catchable position for Nebraska's wide receivers in that game against BYU. If the ball was in position and it was catchable, they were catching it. And that was something we just haven't ever seen.
And what Jordan Westerkamp did after catches at times was simply amazing.
And the guy's a hell of a football player. But I mean, all those guys were, I mean, Stanley Morgan, I mean, guys were making plays from the wide receiver spot. I mean, you and I've been kind of touching on Williams as a wide receivers coach for, well, since we started doing these podcasts again, what, about a month ago? And the guy has made a difference. As a position coach, there's a difference that you can look at a given position group and you can see a decided difference from the last couple of years. Guys are in position to catch the ball. When the ball's there, they're catching it almost every time. I mean, it blew my mind that it's been the first time in a while that I've seen guys in position and they're catching it almost every time it's there.
So what you're saying is they're actually being coached. I mean, the little things.
They are being taught. We haven't seen that for a while. And that's going to be a difference maker as the season goes along. Would have been awesome to have Pearsonell out there. We don't. Guys stepped up. Guys were making catches. That was huge.
How about the running back position?
That's going to be a work in progress, I think. You know, there's guys like Amani Cross who, you know, he's big. He doesn't have that burst, though. It'd be great to see a guy have that size, have that initial burst to get up into the hole, because that's where you see guys as – you see those big running backs as difference makers, like a Brandon Jacobs in his heyday with the Giants, a Ron Dane at Wisconsin. Those guys had a first-step burst as a big man. I don't know if Amani Cross truly has that initial really fast burst into the hole as a big man to be the difference-making big man running back. Wilbon, I thought, did very well. He's got quickness that I don't think a lot of fans were anticipating seeing. I thought Newby did solid. Again, I'd like to, none of them have that ability where – you get that hole that's this incredibly tight space where you can get into it sideways, still have that power and that first quick step past the hole to get 5-6 yards. And that's something that a guy like Amir Abdullah had that just, man, nobody in this group of running backs has shown us yet.
So as the season goes along offensively, do you expect this team to be 50-50 run pass, 60-40 pass run, 70-30 pass run? What do you expect? What do you think this team has its best, just by what you've seen and what you just...
What we saw on Saturday, this is going to be a 60-40 pass team.
Okay.
They're going to be passing. They're going to be play action pass. It'd be a great setup, I think, if they could kind of move back to the old spread option pass that Osborne used to run, where you're rolling a quarterback out. He's got a pitch man or the ability to throw the ball downfield. And, again, we haven't really seen that since Osborne was the coach, but that's kind of a setup that I think this offense would be made for. I think it's going to be a while before you see the offensive line at Nebraska. I think they've got some great young players, but it's going to be a year or two before you see these guys who you're going to tell an offensive line, hey, it's 3rd and 1, doesn't matter who we have carrying the ball, you need to go get us a first down.
If you want this wisdom during the game, you can always follow Doc on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Our Twitter account keeps growing week by week. It's because of the knowledge he professes in 140 characters. It's absolutely amazing. So we've talked about the offense. We've talked about the coaching. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. Gave up 33 points. Played well at times in the second half. Couldn't play prevent defense with 1 second to go, not being a smartass.
No,
there.
Nobody plays prevent defense well.
You didn't like the way they played that, though, did you?
I would have liked to have seen them put a little pressure on that quarterback. When the ball's on the 50-yard line and it's a 6'5", 220-pound NFL-caliber passing quarterback who runs with, you don't time him with a stopwatch, you time him with a calendar. This isn't a scramble threat. Put pressure on him and make him throw a bad throw. And Nebraska gave him the ability to roll out, get into space, get a clear view down the field, and put everything he had into a 50-55-yard throw. You put a little pressure on him and force him to force that throw, force him to get it off quicker than he wants it to, and I don't think they make that play. There's 1 second left. They either score a touchdown or the game's over, and that's going to be a situation. Screw it. Put one or two extra rushers on them. Having that many defenders down at the goal line, it's just not going to make that much difference, especially when you got a 6'9 wide receiver or whatever that kid was. One more defender on a quarterback could make all the difference on that play. Now, on the whole, though, I thought Nebraska's defense played well. I thought they played in godly soft in the first half. I think the defensive backs, they were giving the wide receivers a load of cushion. They weren't playing aggressively. And a lot of these guys are Pelini recruits who were recruited to play Cam Chancellor, Sherman-type defensive back play that you see with Seattle. Get in a guy's back pocket, be physical, bump with them going down the field. Nebraska change. That was the other place where you saw the big change, the big adjustment at halftime. The two things: blitz pickup on the offensive line side. On the defensive side, you saw these guys get really aggressive and started playing really, really tight, very physical coverage the entire second half. And it changed things. You didn't see BYU just going out and at will picking apart Nebraska's defense like you did in that late first quarter and throughout the second quarter.
Of course, the Huskers are going to be back in action at home Saturday night to play South Alabama. But we want you to get your pregame meal at 9th and P. Stop by the Chicago Doghouse Weenie Wagon and visit Kelly. Kelly Keegan is usually dressed up like Bob Devaney. He's got a little Bob Devaney suit on. He's out there slinging hot dogs, serving Cokes and chips. But it's a great place before and after the game to start celebrating Husker spirit. It's the Chicago Doghouse Weenie Wagon, tucked away right at 9th and P. Stop by, tell Kelly you heard him.
Great bratwurst.
Great bratwurst. And by the way, if you want the Chicago Doghouse during the week and you happen to be in Omaha, make sure to stop at the Chicago Doghouse store, which is located in Midtown Crossing, right about, what is it, 3157 Farnham.
Just right on the north side on the corner.
Yes, and they have great daily specials. One of my favorite daily specials takes place on Wednesday. It's Butkus Wednesday, which is a jalapeno sausage, fries, and a pop for just $6.99. Wednesdays may be
my
favorite.
I got a good friend who's a big fan of the Butkus.
Really?
Yeah, Chris Covey, lawyer Chris Covey, okay. Local guy. I got to throw his name out there. He likes the Butkus.
Nice. So Chicago Doghouse during the week by visiting them at Midtown Crossing or before and after the game at 9th and P. Check them out for your pregame meal. So they're taking on South Alabama. They say most improvements made between game one and game two. Are we going to see that moving from a BYU to a South Alabama?
I want to see Nebraska slaughter these guys, and there's absolutely no reason they should. I know they're making comparisons to the whole McNeese State thing, but you know what? Here's my bottom line. This is not a Power 5 conference school. This is not a classic 1A football program. Nebraska should do to them what Iowa did to the Little Sisters of the Poor that they played this past.
Illinois State?
Yeah. And I mean that. I mean, you know what? I'm tired of these 1AA teams, these FCS schools, coming in and looking good. That should not happen. There is a decided program.
Now, they're not FCS. They're not FCS.
Might as well be. They're mid-major. It's South Alabama.
They might as well be.
They should. Nebraska should dismantle these.
Well, I've always said this. Great teams and good teams do what good teams do, and that is beat up bad teams.
And that's my point exactly. I know we even touched on this with Iowa, that going in against Illinois State. You had a very, very good team in Illinois State at the division they play at. And it was, everybody was saying, hey, this is the upset alert for Iowa this year. You know what? Iowa did to them what they should have done to them.
And do you know who played really good in that game? A guy by the name of Drew Ott, who is a beast. He's a mofo. He is a difference maker.
And he is a Nebraska native.
I think he could have played in Lincoln. Call me crazy.
Could have?
Two Nebraskans started. Cole Fisher started linebacker, and Drew Ott started it.
Could have started. Could have played.
I was
in
being
Lincoln?
A little sarcastic there. He was not. I've never seen.
The guy's an all-conference defensive end.
It's been a while since I've seen an Iowa guy dominate like that. And
Nebraska. He's from Nebraska.
Yes. Right? Okay. I'm sorry. It's been a while since I've seen a Nebraska guy dominate like that.
Nebraska guy dominate for Iowa.
Have to go back to Larry Station, maybe, huh?
Oh, good Lord.
So, yeah, but...
yeah, it's, you know what? It's a step down. It's an uninteresting game in my mind.
Are you going?
I am planning on going. You know, it's one of those things. I'm sitting here thinking about this absolute gut-wrenching loss for Nebraska in that opener. In hindsight, it was a fun game. It was a blast to watch. It's BYU. Nebraska's never played BYU. You got BYU and Lincoln. It's a major school, in my opinion. I know they've had some ups and downs, but so is Nebraska. Games like BYU, games like Miami, those are interesting games. I hope Nebraska for eternity continues to schedule like this, where you're putting two, maybe three really good non-conference teams on the schedule. I do not want to see the South Alabama's on the schedule anymore. The McNeese State's on the schedule anymore. It's Arkansas State. It's just completely uninteresting.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. You can follow him on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. And again, look for him as he's going to be at the South Alabama game to watch the Huskers pick up their first win of the season. And we'll go out on a limb and say they will pick up that first win of the season. I want to thank the Benson Brewery for being a supporter of the Doc Talk podcast, as well as the Chicago Doghouse and our good friends at Husker Max. But our presenting sponsor is the Remington Trophy. For more information about the Remington Trophy, go to remingtontrophy.com. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th at the Rococo Theater. Not only do they give away the Remington Trophy that night, but the Ford Legends Award winner as well, as it highlights a former great center from college football. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for tuning in and listening to this edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.